So tonight, I would like to talk about what's known as the four Idipada. A couple of weeks ago, for those of you who were here a couple of weeks ago, you might remember me talking about intent in a pre-meditation talk, unbending intent, having a really strong, clear sense of purpose about what you're doing when you meditate. And I used an illustration and I don't know how it went. I don't know if it helped at all, but I thought it was fun. And when I thought about it afterwards, I realized that it was one unbending intent or the desire or sense of purpose was one of the four Idipada, what the Buddha called Idipada. What do we mean by Idipada? There are two basic translations for this term. Idi means power, and Idipada means either roads to power or bases for power. And we're talking about spiritual power. And hopefully we'll get a sense of what that means as the talk develops. The Buddha said of these four Idipada, "Monks, these four bases for spiritual power, when developed and cultivated, are noble and emancipating. They lead the one who acts upon them out to the complete destruction of suffering." And I take it we're all here for the same reason, that we want the total destruction of suffering. That's what brings us here this evening. That's what brought us to the center. That's why we meditate, is that we want to realize the third noble truth, freedom from suffering. And so the Buddha is saying that the development of these four Idipada, when they're developed and cultivated, they bring the power you need in order to bring about the realization of the cessation of suffering. And what are these four? They are the concentration of intention accompanied by activities of striving. I will explain all of this. The concentration of energy accompanied by activities of striving. The concentration of consciousness accompanied by activities of striving. The concentration of investigation accompanied by activities of striving. Firstly, what do we mean by power? There are two kinds of power. There's worldly power and then there's spiritual power. We are mostly, all of us, aware of worldly power, both in what we see in the world around us, in terms of the way people control and manipulate life in the attempt to try to what? To bring about a cessation of suffering, to find fulfillment, wholeness, completion, security, whatever it is. Ultimately, everyone wants to be free of suffering. And we know that in our own lives. I imagine what's brought us all here is that we've tried enough of the worldly ways of power to come to the conclusion that they don't actually work. Well, it's not that they don't work. You can become very powerful in the world, but it remains entirely unsatisfactory. Whatever you gain, you're going to lose. Whatever you lose, you're going to gain. It's like whatever it is that you try to do to try to realize freedom from suffering, something always comes along that seems to spoil it. Things don't last. Things arise and pass away. The Buddha also went through that process, as we know, looking at his life story. It ended up with him abandoning all worldly pursuits of power, prestige, fame. He could have been what they call a wheel-turning monarch if he had chosen to be. Meaning that he would have been able to wield a most incredible amount of worldly power, but he chose to renounce all of that in pursuit of spiritual power, the understanding of what it is that causes suffering and how to realize the cessation of suffering. So spiritual power is really more about self-mastery and gaining a true knowledge of the world. True comprehension, true understanding of the real nature of what's unfolding. And so when we come to meditation, we do so on the foundation of the Buddha's teaching and his Four Noble Truths, which essentially is saying what he discovered was that all suffering arises fundamentally out of an ignorance, the tendency to ignore, to blindly reject the true nature of reality, and instead passionately crave for things to be different. And that's what perpetuates the suffering, is this passionate craving born of ignorance. And so what do we do when we meditate? Instead of ignoring reality, we turn around to look directly at it. The Buddha taught the Noble Eightfold Path as the way to realize the cessation of suffering. In a sense, when we meditate, not necessarily when we just sit with our eyes closed and doze, or just drift, or just, you know, indulge in planning without any thought at all for the purpose of meditation. But when we meditate properly, we do actually fulfill all eight steps in the Noble Eightfold Path, which is kind of helpful to know that. What's also really helpful to know is that when we're meditating, what we're being asked to do is to rest content in the moment and watch things arise and pass away. So the whole of the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path can be summed up with just rest where you are, stop trying to get somewhere else, and just pay exquisite attention to unfolding conscious experience and observe and look and find out directly what life's actually made of. Which again really simplifies things. So these four idipada, unbending intent, appropriate use of energy, purity of consciousness, and an ever deepening investigation into the true nature of reality, they develop, they are cultivated and developed simply by learning to rest content in the moment, watching things arise and pass away. It's magic. And as these four bases, these four roads to power, are cultivated and matured, the ability for a meditator to retain clarity of investigation, lovely balanced energy, and the overarching purpose of investigating experience and coming to understand experience, with the maturing of these four idipada comes that real power, the power to see through the appearance of things and really begin to appreciate the true nature of reality underneath the surface appearance. And perhaps that will become clearer as we go through this talk. So, the instruction is simply meditative instruction, vipassana, meditation. It's so simple, the instruction, and it's so difficult to do, I do appreciate that. To rest content in the moment, watching things arise and pass away. How do these four idipada help us with this? I think the first most important thing with meditation is to realize that if, like I said before, you're not just sitting in a chair dozing, you have a strong sense of intent, of purpose, and the desire to actually practice meditation, and you sit down and you close your eyes, you are doing it just by doing that. That is success. You are doing it right. It's not wrong. We have to start meditation from the premise that we are doing it correctly. Right? That's really, really important. How else are you going to rest content? If you start the meditation believing that there's something wrong and you've got to somehow pull a rabbit out of a hat, a miraculous act on your behalf to make meditation work and make it happen, then you're already misusing your energy, you're misusing your intent, you've already created an unnecessary problem for yourself, and you are not content. So we begin, and maybe it might not feel like it at the time, but you begin from the knowledge that I sit down, I close my eyes, I'm aware of the body resting in the chair, I'm perhaps aware of the breathing process occurring at the abdomen, and I'm happy and content that this is what meditation is. And we know that what happens is that the mind becomes interested in other things apart from that. And it goes off on a little narrative, a little story. The pettiness of life is taken up in some way, shape or form. At that moment, there is a lapse of intent. Something else has become important. And we note what that is. And in the instant, we become aware of where the mind has gone, what story it's taken up with. At that moment, meditation has been restored. At that moment, there is nothing to worry about. You simply acknowledge what type of thinking it was, what type of experience it was, and then very gently bring the attention back to the body, back to the breathing process, which is your reference point. And in a nutshell, that's the practice. So I want to use an illustration to help bring out what these four iddhipada actually are. And the illustration I used a couple of weeks ago, I'm going to use again. And this might get a bit repetitive because I'm going to use exactly the same illustration for all four iddhipada. And you will also notice that when it comes to meditation, I'm also talking about exactly what I just talked about. So nothing much is really going to change in that regard. So we're just looking at the same process of meditation, just from slightly different angles, and we'll see how, hopefully see how all these four iddhipada come together. So the illustration is so simple, symbolic. A meditator jumps in their car to come to the meditation center on a Wednesday evening for a Wednesday evening meeting. So first of all, we have intention. The intention is to go to drive the car to the center for the Wednesday evening meeting. And this is really interesting because you start to notice with intention that there is an initial conscious intention. I want to go to the meditation center. And then there are all these activities that have to take place in order to reach the meditation center. All these things inside the car, being observant of what's going out on outside. And yet, that intention never wavers. I wonder how many meditators have genuinely set out, not including things like accidents or anything like that, but have genuinely set out to go to the meditation center on Wednesday night and midway just forgotten. Or just thought, oh, do you know, I'm going to go into the park and spend the evening in the park. And say, let's not discount all possibilities, but I would say it's fairly few. So that intention hasn't been consciously referred to during that journey, and yet it's been there every step of the way. Every slip of the clutch, every use of the accelerator, every use of the brake, every indicator, every movement of the steering wheel had invested in it silent intent. I'm going to the meditation center. When we meditate, we are doing exactly the same thing. We're not consciously always going, nibbana, nibbana, or transience, transience, where is it? That intent comes with us, but it's silent. But the activities of the meditation are always reinforcing that intent. Every time the mind strays for a second, or for a minute, for half an hour, onto something else, and you become aware that it has moved off, that's reinforced your intent. In that moment, whether you consciously recognize it or not, you've remembered what you were doing. You've remembered why you were meditating. That's why it's never a problem that the mind goes on a little narrative adventure. It's fine, because the moment you become aware that the mind has gone off on that track, that memory, that remembrance is exactly what you want. That is reinforcing the intent. So you just gently bring the attention back again. The observation of the breathing process is your anchor, is your reference point. That's building your intent. If you're noting different states of mind arising, that's your intent. That's developing your intent. You're cultivating the power of intent. You're cultivating the Iddhipada of intent just by doing what you're doing in the meditation. And the development of unbending intent is delightful, because over time, the intent becomes concentrated. And this is how the Buddha describes the Iddhipada of intent: concentration of intent accompanied by activities of striving. So on the one hand, you've got the activities of striving, the activities of bringing the attention back to your overarching purpose, and you've also got, over time, you've got the concentration of that intent, meaning that for larger and larger portions of your meditation, there is the clear comprehension of your purpose. So you, for longer and longer stretches of meditation, there is a clear sense of direction. And when you have that clear sense of direction, that brings up gladness. It brings up a sense of joy. It can bring up rapture. It's a beautiful thing to, when you're noting transients, to know that you're noting transients, to know that this is what you had intended to do and that you're doing it. Concentration of energy accompanied by activities of striving. We don't drive cars at one speed. That would be ridiculous. We don't just put... what's the expression? Pedal to the metal. We don't just try to get to the meditation center on Wednesday night as fast as we possibly can. We'd be arrested. We use skill with energy. There's petrol in the tank, or if you're a very modern sort of person, electricity in the tank. And then we use it wisely, we use it cleverly. We change gears. We push the accelerator, sometimes we push the brake, we change gears again. We're changing speeds as we're going along based on what? What the needs are of the situation. We have the overarching intent to get to the meditation center, but we're using energy cleverly. We do exactly the same thing in meditation. I learnt the three E's when it came to energy. On occasions, there's exerting. On occasions, there's easing up. And on occasions, there's encouraging. So it's exactly the same in meditation as we would do when we were driving the car. We have the overarching intent, the purpose, knowing what we're doing. We're just resting in the moment, watching things arise and pass away. Why is it then that we've got a splitting headache? Why is it that the body feels so tense? It's because we're pushing, 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 because we think there's something wrong and we're trying to get the meditation right. And what you learn over time is to recognize that that is simply an excess of energy. And you learn, three E's. This is time for easing up. So we develop this ability to adjust, to use an appropriate level of energy based on our overarching intention. Balanced energy is delightful. This is why it's so important to start a meditation from the assumption that it's going well and that it's right, that it's balanced, that it's where you need to be. Then you recognize that the mind has gone off on its journey into some narrative. It's all about how you respond in that moment. If you believe that you have to do something heroic or energetic to get the meditation back in order, before long you'll feel anxious, tense, and irritable. If, however, you recall your intention, you know what to do in that situation, then you know that all you simply need to do is accommodate whatever obstacle or difficulty you believe is there, to watch it, to be with it, to allow it. So you're easing off, you're not pushing, you're relaxing into the moment, you're inclusive and accepting of whatever it is that you found. Balanced energy is delightful because you discover that at the one and the same moment with meditation, you're being both productive and you have this overwhelming sense of being at ease. You know when you've got balanced energy because it feels like the town's just gone on holiday. Everything feels so quiet. And yet, you're not being lazy, because you're noting what's taking place. You're noting sounds, you're noting thoughts, you're noting feelings, you're noting sensations. You're observing the fact that all those things arise and pass away. There's a clear sense that this is the direction, you know this is the right direction for the meditation. So there's this palpable sense of having a clear sense of directing, of direction, and you're acting in accordance with your deepest, most wishes. And you're exploring the nature of a conscious experience, which is a delightful and profound thing to do. And at the same time, there is this wonderful sense of just being at ease. Concentration of consciousness accompanied by activities of striving. Here we're really talking about purity of consciousness. So we set out in our car. You've got a dusty windscreen. Bugs start hitting the windscreen, it starts raining. What do? You get out the windscreen wipers and wipe away the stuff that's getting in the way. That's exactly what we do with meditation. We need clarity. Just in the same way we need clarity with our windscreen in order to see what kinds of obstacles are coming up in our car, we also need a nice clean windscreen in our minds. Our minds do need to be clean. There needs to be clarity of awareness. How do we do that? Well, we rest content in the moment, watching things arise and pass away. When some kind of distracting thought arises, or the mind becomes interested in a particular set of thoughts, we simply acknowledge and include those. We acknowledge the fact that attending in that way is all we need to do, so we don't need to wrestle those thoughts away. We don't need to push and pull and fight. We don't need to judge and compare, because all we're doing there is just throwing more and more stuff on the window of our mind until we can't see anything. All that was ever required was just to be happy in the moment, acknowledge what comes up, be inclusive of absolutely everything, allow it to be there, see it for what it is, and that is meditation. I know I make it sound easy, and I know it's not easy, but gradually, as these iddhipada become stronger and stronger, it does simplify, it does become easier. So, there are hindrances. Sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, worry and doubt. We know that. We know that those come up in the mind. As we develop our skill in the practice, it becomes easier and easier to acknowledge these, to accept their presence, to stop fighting, and to allow them to be there, knowing that they are all forms of the worldly kinds of power that we've tried in the past and that haven't succeeded. They're all attempts to try to resolve the problem of suffering. You haven't gone wrong. That's just the conditioning of the mind. They're just habitual tendencies. So we acknowledge them, we see them for what they are. We don't even have to let them go, because if we see them properly with our clean windscreen, we understand intuitively what they are. That's the meditation. That's sensual desire. And the clear noting of it frees you from it in that moment. Having a calm mind free of hindrances, you have to remember that the hindrance is the oddity. You don't have to worry about trying to keep the mind clean. Rather, it's just knowing that you've got the windscreen wipers there to use if you need them. And so again, you just assume that everything's okay. You are in balance. Everything's fine. When you have clear evidence that the mind has gone somewhere else, then you deal with it. Other than that, you just assume that everything's fine. So it makes the meditation so much lighter, so much easier, so much more, well, enjoyable. A calm mind that's free of hindrances feels like being freed of a debt. It feels like you've been let out of jail. It's like I say, it feels like the town's gone on holiday. There is this definite quietening, this tranquility, this sense of well-being that starts to well up in a mind that's free of hindrances. And that welling up of rapture, that welling up, that lightness of mind that starts to develop, that is the Iddhipada gaining in strength, being cultivated, powering up for you. And of course, that allows us to watch transience with great clarity, because you've got this lovely, clean mind that can deal with hindrances when they arise and can let go of them easily. Concentration of investigation, accompanied by activities of striving. It goes without saying that if you're coming to the meditation for the first time, you might well need a map in order to find your way here, or at least you go online and get your phone to do it for you. We need a map when we're in unfamiliar territory. Of course, even when we're in familiar territory, though, it pays tremendously to keep on paying attention. If we're coming to the meditation center, we don't want to prang in the car. We don't want to run anyone over. We don't want to go over roundabouts or anything like that. We want to get here in one piece and preferably not kill anyone on the way. So paying attention when you're driving seems like common sense. We are constantly investigating when we're driving. We're constantly assessing, observing, making choices based on conditions. When it comes to meditation, investigation, of course, is crucial. I like to describe investigation as an exploration, to try to really bring out the sense of wonder and profundity that comes with this investigation of conscious experience. That willingness to be 100% inclusive. There's nothing wrong. Nothing can go wrong in meditation. There's nothing that could come along that shouldn't be there. If someone starts, I don't know, hiccuping in a meditation, you're inclusive of it. You don't exclude it. You're really putting me off. You include it, because it turns out hiccups, I haven't written hiccups on here at all, by the way. Hiccups are transient. I don't know how profound that is for you, but it's actually the case. The things that you think that you can't accept and you can't include, you can. And it's your willingness to be 100% inclusive and to investigate whatever arises. That's what we mean by choiceless awareness. And this leads to a really profound change in the way that we relate to the world. Because remember, whatever we do in meditation, we take out of the meditation too. It starts to inform our everyday life. And there is this real sense of, you've got the surface level of appearance of things, and our usual attitude towards that is that it's the known. We know all about it. It's not important. I'm bored of it. Oh, I've seen it all before. And yet the more you actually pay attention, the more this rapture and this sense of wonder at life really starts to emerge. It becomes very profound, especially when you start getting into the insight knowledges of seeing things arise and pass away again and again, and all your assumptions about the way you thought you knew and understood the world are just obliterated by what you find. It becomes very, very powerful through time. So what is spiritual power? I noticed that all the things that I have to mention here about what happens during the course of the development of insight, wisdom, vipassana, they all come with this tremendous sense of gladness, this sense of profundity, the sense of rapture that arises with them. What is spiritual power? To be able to rest alert in the moment and explore conscious experience is powerful, genuinely powerful. What you'll discover through that learning how to do that is quite incredible. Being hindrance free is powerful. Having mastery of the mind to the degree where you understand the hindrances so well that their appearance doesn't bother you. I had don't know where it came from, but there was some negativity around one morning when I got up, and there was worry in the mind. And I just got to the point where I just went, I just don't believe you. And it went away. Comprehending mind and body. So in a state free of hindrances, you start to investigate your experience. You start to understand what's meant by aggregates in real time. You start to note them and recognize them. You start to understand what's meant by conditionality because you're actually looking at it and seeing it and experiencing. Rapture arises, great faith arises, gladness arises. They're all signs of the development of these four Iddhipada, that they're coming together, that they're growing, they're maturing. Knowledge of the truth of action and result through seeing conditionality. Actually, that is so powerful. When you become the master of action and result, when you know from your own experience which are the actions that produce future pain and which are the actions that produce future pleasant feelings, and you are able to choose your actions accordingly, is extraordinarily powerful. That comes with developing these four Iddhipada. The knowledge of the arising and passing away of aggregates is a period in insight, the development of insight, which is extraordinarily profound and deep, because for the first time the meditator experiences non-clinging and what that actually feels like. Seeing things arise and passing away, knowing you don't have to get involved, letting life flow completely without any self-concern, is a most extraordinary, powerful moment in somebody's life. And there is great faith, great rapture, there's great concentration, there's a deep sense of profundity. And as a meditator keeps on exploring and developing these insight knowledges, insight into transience, insight into unsatisfactoriness, insight into non-self, insight into conditionality, as the insight matures, as these four Iddhipada become stronger and stronger and stronger and more concentrated, the insight, it becomes as though the insight is happening all by itself. There's such clarity, such deep, clear vision of the way things actually are, that it's as if these insight knowledges are born of themselves. They just come to you. You don't do anything. You just sit there and it's just absolutely clear. And this leads, in the end, these Iddhipada become so strong, so powerful, that there is this, on each of the four paths, there's what we call the supramundane path and fruition, where the mind is so completely wise as to the true nature of reality that for a moment it just lets go completely. It gives up its obsession with the world and alights just for a brief moment on that which lies beyond the world. And that is a most extraordinarily powerful moment in anybody's life. So, the four Iddhipada, developing intent, an unbending intent, energy, an appropriate use of energy, developing purity of consciousness, developing ever-deepening investigation, all from simply resting content in the moment watching things arise and pass away. That's all you need to do. Is there an end of the insight journey? Most definitely. After the four paths of stream winning, once returner, non-returner, and the Arahant path, there's just one final development that needs to take place. The stepless step, the realization that the journey of developing insight into the true nature of reality finally ends with complete and permanent liberation through non-clinging. It is the most extraordinary, I was going to say experience, to realize that's a completely wrong thing to say because it's not an experience at all. It's the realization in that moment that there had never been a journey, that the road to power that you had been on was no road at all, that you've never been anywhere, that you're not going anywhere, that there's nowhere you possibly could go, that there is only the here and now, and it's beginningless, and it's endless, and it's perfect. And there is, from that moment on, the beginning of true journey of life, free entirely of suffering. As I say, it's a beginningless, endless journey of endless exploration, investigation, joyful, happy, peaceful, free of all those hindering worries and concerns. Yes, we have to make it to the end of this human life, finally give up the body, and realize that you never ever have to pick up another body again. And yet the journeying, the adventures, are never ending. So, the four bases for spiritual power are, well, to say they're worthwhile developing would be an understatement, the biggest understatement of all time. Cultivate them, develop them. They are, as the Buddha said, noble and emancipating. And all you have to do is rest content in the moment and watch things rise and pass away.